So, Adam, you know that like we sign off every episode the same way pretty much, right?
Oh, you mean with my famous catchphrase, remember that singing off key is still technically singing.
Yeah, I mean functionally, like in a musical sense, that's 16 syllables. I mean, it's 17 syllables, but you would never say technically. So it's 16 syllables. That's very singable.
Sure. Yeah, it is. Did you want me to try to sing it, Ed?
Absolutely. No one wants to hear me sing.
Okay, give me a tune. Give me a tune. Let's see how this goes.
That song from Rent, the 525,600 minutes.
Oh, the 525,600 minutes.
Yep.
Remember that singing off key is still technically singing. 500, that one? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have another one in mind?
I mean, you love Johnny Cash, so hey, Porter.
Hey, Porter. Hey, Porter. Me a sign. Remember that singing off key is still. No, that one doesn't work very
It
well.
doesn't work at all,
No,
though.
no. Give me another one.
My way.
And now an end is near. And
And remember
remember
that
that
singing
singing off
off-key.
key
No, doesn't work
is
either.
still technically singing. It works if you're patient, but Ed just ended so soon, and
I
I
often
sang it.
finish very early.
And now the end is near. It took 1 minute. Is that good, Ed? Welcome back to the greatest song ever sung poorly. It's a karaoke podcast that is the direct result of when boredom meets fandom. I'm your world traveler, Adam Wainwright.
I am your decidedly homebody, Ed Kennard.
We all need a homebody. You know what I'm saying, Ed? There's no place like home.
Especially when you work from there now, you know?
Oh, maybe they're okay. Yeah, that's true. Homes, the definition of home's changed. Yeah, that's something I hadn't really thought about going into the past year and a half.
Work
Yep.
working from home is hard. I gotta say that. Like I only started doing it a few months ago, and man, I'm going stir crazy with it. And it was about to get worse.
Why
For
was it about to get worse?
a second, I thought I was gonna have to give up drinking. Not that I drink at work, if anyone, is, work related to listening to this, but no, I just had this like my body hit its 40s. All of a sudden, I got my chronic heartburn like intensified to the point where like I felt like my stomach was trying to eat me from the inside out.
Not what you want a stomach to feel like.
No, it was horrible. I actually ended up missing a day. Like, how do you call in sick from work when you work from home? But I did, because that entire night, I think I ate like a bottle of Tums to just get through it. I got no sleep. I'm better now. It was just it was a freak momentary thing, but man, it was scary. It was not fun. I hope your
No.
week was better.
It was better, but there's two things I want to bring up about that. One, A, you should definitely take time off when working from home if you're sick or if you don't feel well or if you need a mental health day. It's no different than going into the office. You still need to take care of yourself and rest and get that back. And you can't do that if you're stressed out or focusing on work. So
That's
kudos for you to taking it.
a
And I,
salient point. Yes.
yeah, everybody should do that if they don't feel. Two, I had a similar, not quite to like my stomach eating me from the inside out experience, but we were at a wedding. Courtney and I were at a wedding a couple weeks ago, and I had some mixed drinks for the first time. I had a long time, so I had soda, which I'm not a big soda drinker, and I had liquor, which I hadn't had the combination of the two. And it was probably some of the worst heartburn I've ever had, to the point where was trying to get my groove on the dance floor as one does, and I had to keep stepping away because to burp and noxious gas and all that stuff, and it was just so consistent over the course of a couple hours that it was just
I've seen you dance. So maybe the stepping away actually kind of looked like a dance move. It might have improved it.
It could have improved it. You're funny, Ed. You're real funny. You're so funny that I need to make you pay. So let's, Ed, I have, you got me last week with the Broadway trivia. It was fun for you, I think. For me, I languished a little bit.
I thought we both had a good time.
Sure. I like to lead you to believe that I'm having a good time. I put the smile on the face really well. But it's my turn, so I'm coming at you with something new today. So today, over the audio waves, we're going to play Heads Up. You know Heads Up, the game that Ellen designed? That's the Smash app.
Is it a Smash app?
It is a Smash app, Ed.
Okay.
But you're familiar with Heads Up.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. I'm fairly certain I've played it before.
Okay, great. So for listeners out there who may not know what Heads Up is, it's an app that is basically charades in a way. So the way it's going to work is I'm going to get a random cue that's going to be a word. I need to describe it to Ed, and Ed needs to try to guess the word. We're going to play three decks that we've determined beforehand, one that Ed picked, one that I picked, and one that was randomly chosen. I chose Broadway Baby to keep with our theme from last week. Ed chose I'm With the Band, which I think is all about bands. I guess we'll find out. And our random pick was Adult Supervision 2 was the deck. And I'm setting a benchmark. I think the average per round should be about 5 correct. So if Ed only gets 9 correct for total, 9 or less total for the entire 3 rounds, he's going to be subject to a unique punishment that we're going to start integrating into these games. If he scores 21 points or more, I'm going to be subject to a unique punishment for him exceeding expectations by a lot. Ed, do you agree with these rules? Do you have any questions, comments before we get started?
No, I think these rules are fantastic.
Yeah, should we let the listeners know what this proposed punishment is?
Yeah, I think we should, because I've already forgotten in the meantime.
Great. So the proposed punishment for either Ed or I in any of these challenges that we do moving forward is that if one exceeds or exceeds expectations or epically fails, the other one of us will get to pull up a YouTube track, a karaoke track on YouTube, and they're going to have to sing along cold on air to whatever the other one pulls up. So we're getting a little bit of No Shame karaoke worked in there for a punishment in only 30 seconds. So we're not subjecting you, our beautiful, beautiful listeners, to any more than that.
That sounds fair.
Ed, how do you feel about that proposal?
You know me, I'm down for anything.
Yeah, you are. I know. Wink.
Nudge.
Okay, without further ado, here we go. First category is going to be Broadway Baby. This is the one that I picked. Ed, are you ready?
No. No, I'm ready. Again, how long is it? Is it 60 seconds?
It's 60 seconds. We're okay. Just going, Ed. Just get ready. Okay, All right. 3, 2, 1. This is from the musical Evita. It's a big number.
Don't Cry for Me, Argentina.
Boom, that's 1 point. Kelsey Grammer was in this. I think he cross-dressed. It was a musical back in 2003, 4?
Hedwig?
No. Another one. Priscilla? Famous. They dance on the tables. They turn it into like a cabaret type thing.
Oh, Rent.
No, I'm passing.
Pass, yeah.
Don't Rain on My Parade is from this musical.
Funny Girl.
Yes. I was in this musical as Snoopy.
You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Yes. Adam Sandler was in the movie version of this musical. It's about somebody who performs at nuptial ceremonies.
The Wedding Singer.
Mm-hmm. She's in Wicked.
Idina Menzel.
Yes. Good job, Ed. Okay, that was it. Time's up. So, yeah, it wasn't so bad. It kind of moved quickly. We're going to get the final score now. I passed on some. I didn't know how to describe Bye Bye Birdie to you. The one you couldn't get was La Cage aux Folles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I didn't know who Michael Crawford was.
He's the guy from Phantom of the Opera.
There we go. So the final total was 5. We're right where I guess the average would be for these rounds. So you got 5 on Broadway Baby. To keep things moving, let's roll right into I'm In the Band. I'm With the Band, VIP, name that band. Here we go. It's filled with bands from history, Ed.
Okay.
History. I'm not placing it on my forehead, heads up. 3, 2, 1. They sing Goodbye Earl.
The Chicks, Dixie Chicks.
There it is. They're very famous siblings. One of them was in the Les Mis, and they were on the Disney Channel. They're male siblings that are very popular. Nick
Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, there we go. They Float On is their big single.
Modest Mouse.
They're the ultimate bro band.
The Backstreet Boys?
No, think bro. Like, if you're going to be a college bro, what are you listening to?
Pass.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
The Spice Girls.
I don't want to miss a thing.
Aerosmith.
Perfect. Done. I passed on some because I just didn't know what to, how to describe them. There's definitely an era that is, there's a very large gap in my musical history. And okay. I learned that as I looked at that.
What were they?
The ultimate bro band, Ed, is Mumford and Sons.
Okay.
But the ones that like, the gap in my musical history is going to be like 80s hair metal. Like okay. Black Sabbath, ZZ Top. I'm not a big Fish
fan. Both of those are 70s bands?
Sure. Fish was never a band I got into either.
Jam bands are what jazz would decided to be if jazz added more guitar and decided to suck.
Yeah, so I just kind of get there, and I forgot Genesis. I just blanked on all that, so I just kept going on until I found ones that I wanted. But you're at 10, so you've safely, like,
I'm safe.
Avoided the punishment. You're going to have a hell of a round here in order to get me to my level, though, because we're right at the average right now. Yep. We should add an addendum that if we actually call, like, guess an average, and that average actually turns out to be correct, just as a little extra incentive in there. But we didn't this time, so let's roll right into the last deck. Adult Supervision 2. We're going to go real fast here. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you the chance to get me there. You just need to be on your P's and Q's. All right, one. It's a things you want to do before you die.
Bucket list.
Yes. You can put them in liquid and relax, or snort them and become a zombie if you're down in Florida.
Cocaine?
No. Put them in water and relax.
Bath bombs.
Close. Pass.
Yeah.
Rolling in the
deep.
Yes. If famous is a very, no one puts baby in a corner.
Dirty Dancing.
Wing place that talks about a woman's chest area.
Hooters.
Somebody who spends a lot of money at a casino is a
gambler.
A lot of money. A lot of money.
A whale.
No. Another term.
High roller.
Well, you got it, but it was too late.
Wow.
It was high roller. So it was bucket list. You missed bath salts, Ed. I couldn't get you to bath salts.
Oh, bath salts.
Relax in it. And there was a big story about that guy in Florida that did a bunch of bath salts and tried to.
And how horrible is it that my first reaction was cocaine?
I have no idea. I was really confused by that. By like, put it in water and relax. Like, I guess that's one way to.
I have no idea what I was thinking.
But you got high roller. You got four in that round, so we finished just under the average. So congratulations, Ed. You got 14. That's a very mediocre score.
I feel like the audience ones, they don't have to hear me sing. So that's,
Man, I want to hear you sing. We haven't got to hear you sing on this podcast yet. Although if you go to the Twitter, you did post the video the other day.
I did.
So if you want to hear Ed sing, go back and listen, like look it up at Sung Poorly on Twitter. Ed posted a very special video of him singing very specially. Yeah. Not to be missed. So Ed, now that the challenge is out of the way, we've said the cordial things that you say at the top of a podcast, or at least that's what the general format seems to be. So we do it. It's always interesting to hear
blatantly
about your life.
Stole it, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Blatantly stole it from everybody. You're welcome, America.
I mean, we're functionally doing podcasting as karaoke, right?
We basically are. That's all we're doing, right? Really, is we're just imitating every other podcast, and we're doing it so damn well, though. So damn well. But what we're not doing well right now is getting into the actual topic of this episode. What is our topic this episode? And I completely forgot.
Yeah, it's rightly been pointed out to us that we are very biased in our karaoke experience. We're bar guys. We like a crowd. We like a stage. Mm-hmm. We like an audience. We've talked to people who do online karaoke. We've talked to people who do private room karaoke, but everything has been centered in a very Western experience. And this week we're going to take it back to the birthplace of karaoke and talk about karaoke in Asia and specifically in Japan.
Ooh, I like it, Ed. I like this topic this week. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I am excited that we can actually talk about karaoke in Japan, because we are very, Western guys. We like the bar karaoke, but I did have the joy and, experience of living in Japan for a couple of years in my life, and did a lot of karaoke in Japan. So I'm very, very, very excited to talk about. So we also found a great guest who actually reached out to us. that's living in Japan. So we're going to get some of that insight later. So but she's going to really boil down to private room karaoke in Japan and the entire experience of popular songs. So what I'm going to focus a little bit more on, because I'm going to kind of take the lead here and share some of my experiences, is just the kind of culture from, you know, a Western point of view of karaoke in Japan. Do you think that's fair, Ed? Do you think we can explore it that way?
I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about it. I mean, you did some of the private room stuff there, right? But you also did some more audience-facing stuff.
Yeah, I did both. And they were both, you know, wonderful, kind of very, very unique experiences. What really jumped out about me, and I lived in Sasebo, Japan, if any of you are curious, which is the very southern tip of the main island. I was nowhere near any kind of major city like Tokyo. So the experience may change depending on where you are in Japan. But what I experienced in Sasebo was, you know, it's just kind of built into the culture in a way it's not here. Here, it's a fun thing to do every now and then. You know, they pay a DJ to come into a bar and entertain people, or at least give them the option to entertain themselves, I think is more appropriate way to put it, once a week. And, you know, it's a passing thing that if you're not Ed or I or most of you listening to this podcast, for that matter, it's something that if the bar has it, cool, you might get up there and sing a song. You know, in Japan, it's just different. It's just built differently. Which one should I focus on, Ed? What do you want to hear about? Do you want to hear about what I interpret as the overall culture? Do you want to hear about the private room? Do you want to hear about the bar room?
You know what I want to hear about? I want to hear about what your favorite thing was doing karaoke over there.
My favorite thing about doing karaoke over there is it's always welcome. It's not like, I feel like, you know, we've talked about it on this podcast sometimes, you know, extensively, how sometimes karaoke in a bar, especially if there's a sports game going on in Western Pennsylvania, is just not a welcome thing. There's a lot of people that push back against karaoke in a lot of places you're at, a lot of either, you know, regulars at the bar or people that are just coming to drink that night that will sing their one song, but because they're not singing every 10 minutes, they get really upset and pissed off and they hate life. It's just not that way over there. Just about every bar you walk into in Japan, whether is going to have karaoke on any night you want to do it. What they have is they have a system that's, you know, you're so used to, if you have the Western experience, somebody bringing in large speakers in and a laptop and setting up a microphone, is the whole nine yards. It's an entire ordeal. There's normally some kind of stage associated with it. Here it's, I'm sitting at the bar drinking my Jameson and ginger that I paid for 2 hours, not like unlimited 2 hours for. So you pay like $30 and you can drink mixed drinks for 2 hours straight and that's it. So it's $30-$40. I drank Jameson and gingers for 2 hours.
I might have to really look into emigrating.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Well, I mean, I was in the Navy, so I was with guys who took it to a dangerous level, where they used to go there, pay their $40 and bring a Sharpie with them. And anytime they got a drink, they would write a line on their arm. So that way, when they passed out and woke up the next morning and couldn't remember what they did, they could look at their arm and find out how many drinks they had before they blacked out.
Nah, so you were those guys over there.
I was around those guys. I was not that guy over there, to be very clear. I was the guy that would carry those guys home because they couldn't handle their alcohol. But anyway, you know, you sit at these bars, you know, you get your Jameson and ginger and you say, hey, I want to do some karaoke. And what happens is, you know, the bartender brings you over what's the equivalent of a tablet. It almost looks like if anybody ever played the Wii U, like that controller that came with the Wii U. That's almost what these tablets look like. And there was a Japanese and English side. So you press the English button and bring up your English and you can search through, just pick your own song there, go through, select it, and hand the tablet back to the bartender, give them $2 or 200 yen. They'd hand you a wireless microphone and it would pop up on every TV there and play out of the speakers right there at the bar. So you'd sit at the bar and sing karaoke. There was no stage. It wasn't performance based. It was, you know, sit at the bar, pass the microphone around, and just have a good time with everybody at the bar. And that was mainly my experience in bars in Japan. You know, granted, a lot of the bars, you know, it was always just an interesting experience being an American over there anyway, because in the town we were in, there were Japanese based bars and American bars. So, or American friendly bars, let me say. So there were certain bars that, you know, if the owners and none of the bartenders there spoke English, they would give us a signal that would say, no, there's nobody English speaking here, so there's not really a point in us going in. And we just kind of, you know, we respected that because we were, you know, essentially intruders in their culture in a little ways. But we had a lot of really friendly bars. A lot of them are Filipino based, some of them are Japanese based, and they were all gathered there. But we still found a good blend of both, you know, like Japanese nationals that lived in Japan coming in and kind of seamlessly blending with Americans. So you'd hear a couple Japanese songs, a couple American songs. And it was like, it was just a beautiful thing. Like I had some great experiences, you know, singing karaoke with, you know, people from Japan that spoke very little English, but God damn, did they know the words to some American songs? Like it was awesome when that happened. So
what were the big American songs that they sang?
Oh, they love a lot of stuff you love, Ed, that oh, yeah. They didn't necessarily sing it. But if I were to bust out like, I love to sing Smile by Nat King Cole. And Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., you get into any of those voices of that kind of era, like those were always well received. Anything with that kind of smooth, like croony vocal was always well received by, you know, Japanese nationals over there. Strangely, I sang a duet of Linkin Park, which I think I talked about on this podcast before, with a random Japanese gentleman that knew that was pitch perfect singing the American version, which was wild. And I'm going to try to dig for the photo, and I'll post it on our Twitter, of me singing Bon Jovi with a Japanese national. And man, you want to see some committed people to that tune. I need to find the picture. It's one of my favorite pictures ever taken of me doing karaoke.
Okay.
It really is. But those are the songs that were like hip hop's well received over there. If you can rap, it's well received. A lot of the pop songs didn't go over super well. Some of the offbeat stuff. But if you know, you give them some more traditional music, some like I said, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, some hip hop and some hard rock for some reason were all the ones that like really seemed to go over well in the bars in Japan.
Did you come back home loving or learning any songs in Japanese?
I did not, no.
No.
Listen, there's one thing I've learned about myself over the years, Ed, and that's that I'm a smart dude. I pick things up very, 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 very quickly. But the part of the brain that you have to use to like learn a new language and unteach yourself and like that entire like origin of a word stuff and like relearning those origins is just something I'm not capable of. Yeah. Like I'm very, very bad. Very, very bad at this stuff. And I've tried. I really did, but I can't pick it. I never really picked up like Japanese. I learned enough to get around. Like
I clearly know zero Japanese. But were you in town when I almost got in a fight with a military guy in a reverse stolen valor story? Were you there for that?
I was not there for that, and you're gonna have to explain what a reverse stolen
valor is. Okay, so we all know the concept of stolen valor, where people, you know, pretend to be in the military for whatever reason, and like somebody like calls them out on it because, you know, their medals are wrong, or they're just clearly lying about it to get their, you know, discount at IHOP or whatever.
I hate those people. I just need to throw it out there.
But there was a very drunk Navy guy in one of the bars that we used to frequent. And I think this was actually after you had enlisted. And I sang Sukiyaki by Kayu Sakamoto. It's a song. It was the first Japanese language song to chart on the US pop charts in the 50s. It's a song I grew up with, a song I know. I'm not very confident in my pronunciation on a lot of it. I'm singing it fairly phonetically just from hearing it. But there was one night we were at the bar and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've never sang. My thing is I want to sing things I've never sang at karaoke before. So I sang it. And it took me 45 minutes of arguing with this guy that like, no, I was not in the Navy. No, I'm not ashamed of my service because I didn't serve. I'm an alcoholic who knows a lot of songs and likes karaoke. But he's like, I've never heard anyone who was not in the Navy sing that. I'm like, well, you probably only hang out with people in the Navy, right? You don't go to a lot of karaoke. Like, stop. Do I look like military material?
Yes.
Oh, well, I mean, I kind of do look like it until I open my mouth, but, you know.
That sounds like a fucking Navy guy, though. Like,
yeah. My only experience with Japanese karaoke is singing that one song.
That's at least you ventured down the language aisle, which I never did. But if I were to give a tip, if anybody does visit Japan, just remember, like, this is inherently part of the culture. And when we're talking about, we're going to talk about this a little bit later with our guests, but private room karaoke is a really big thing. Even before, like, I'm a performative, like, Western culture type thing where, like, I enjoy a bar, I enjoy audience, but that's not typically the way karaoke is done over there. Like, karaoke is integrated into, like, business meetings. So there will be private rooms where we use the practice and practice and practice. So when, you know, businessmen or women were to step into a meeting and they're having a gathering of karaoke, they want to sound good because it leaves an indelible impression on their superiors or people around them or potential business partners.
Much like golf happens over here.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Ed. It's much like golf happens over here, karaoke over there. Like, if I'm going to go on a golf outing with a potential client, I don't want to embarrass myself playing golf. So I'm going to go practice and try to get better, which I will fail at because I'm an awful golfer and I played a lot of golf. That's exactly it too. So they'll go practice to try to get better. So it's just part of the culture in a way that's just, it's just not over here. Do you think that's for the better or worse, Ed?
I think that's a value neutral thing. I mean, I don't know how to compare cultures, you know, like, I don't think it's necessarily a thing one can do. I can say that I would feel more comfortable in the business environment that I'm in if it was karaoke versus golf. I mean, I know one is my forte and one is not. I am also a terrible golfer despite having grown up on a golf course.
Well, let me clarify. I don't want to compare cultures. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But we can take elements and kind of like look at our culture because we're familiar with it.
Okay.
So if we're looking at the element of
would I want karaoke to be more ubiquitous in American culture? Is that kind of the question you're asking? Yes,
that's the question I'm asking. There we go.
I can't really hazard to say. I mean, I kind of like the fact that we have this established reputation as these weirdo karaoke addicts. You know what I mean? If everyone was doing it, how special would you feel, Adam?
I'd feel very special because I'm fucking good at it. And okay, not so, everybody
yeah,
is.
That, yeah, yeah. No, I know that. I know that for a fact. Man, I would feel less special because I'm the guy who helps everybody else get up and sing. Is like, oh, if that fucker can do it.
And do you think we'd be more popular just in general?
I can't imagine us being more popular, Adam. I mean, I already know too many people.
This is true. We both know too many. No, I don't know too many people. I want more people. I just want more people.
We'll see if we can get more people. Yeah.
I need to get on TikTok. I hear that's how you get the people. Is this true, Ed?
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
It does seem like it. We're steamrolling off track. I'm okay with it though. I'm serious.
I mean, I will say again, I think TikTok is possibly the future of karaoke, but you know.
Ed, if it's the future of karaoke, do you think it's irresponsible of us not to have created a greatest song ever sung poorly TikTok yet?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, we're unhip old men.
Okay. So this is going to be officially a sidebar in this conversation. And this is Ed and me, Adam Wainwright, one of the hosts of this podcast, saying that we will start a shared TikTok account with Ed and I.
We probably won't do that.
We 100% are. We are 100% are. And we will get the information out for you when that's set up. So you can follow and watch us sing along to make videos and feel like the middle-aged men that we are trying to TikTok.
You are making promises I don't think I can keep up with because I have tried to do TikTok and I am officially at the age where I'm like just poking buttons. Like I'm your grandparent who you had to duct tape everything on the remote except for the volume button and the channel button. Cause I'm just like hitting things and things aren't working.
That's what's going to make this channel amazing again. That right there is exactly, that's what I want to bring to the channel. That's it right there. That's perfect. That's exactly what I'm hoping our TikTok will be and expect the TikTok to be.
Yeah.
So we're going to do this.
This is also way funnier if you actually know what I do for a living, which I'm not going to share. But the industry I'm in, like, I kind of should know how to do this.
Yeah, most pole dancers should. I let it slip.
Oh, fuck.
Fuck. God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to out you like that.
But if you want to Venmo me a tip, I mean.
He does love just the tip. We've strayed so far wonderfully off pace. So what you're able to pull from this main segment this week, apparently, is that we're definitely biased towards Western karaoke. You should get a chance to travel to Japan and do it. We're going to get more into private room, which you should absolutely acknowledge. We're going to set up a TikTok for the greatest song ever sung poorly. And Ed loves just the tip. And that's is that a good summary of our main segment, or did I miss anything?
I mean, that is absolutely the spark note.
Okay, good. I'm glad that's the spark note. I'm just going to, no, I'm not going to add another future career for myself. So we should just shut up, Ed.
It would be a first, but yeah, we should.
Shut up. We should shut up and let somebody who lives in Japan currently, lived in New York City for a little while, has a ton of experience with karaoke, and can really be informative about the current karaoke culture, the music associated with it, the videos, the entire nine yards. I'm telling you all, stick around, because our guests bring some great, great perspectives that Ed and I just can't. So how about we cue the guitar and get up out of here? Recently, someone reached out to us with a very valid point that we're fairly locked into the Western concept of karaoke, the kind that takes place in bars. She's here to help bring us the perspective from across the Pacific and is joining us remotely from Japan to talk about our experiences with karaoke there. Ayumi Shinozaki, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're so excited, or at least I'm. We're both very excited. Yeah,
I mean, this you are officially the farthest away physically person that we've talked to, so that's really exciting. I mean, I love it.
I think a lot.
I think it's actually going to be impossible to beat you at this point, because I think Japan's just about on the complete opposite side of the globe from where we are in the United States.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty close. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I guess. I mean, there are like a handful of islands in the Pacific Ocean you could probably get to, but yeah.
That's fair. What part of Japan are you in?
I'm in Tochigi Prefecture, so I'm a few hours north of Tokyo.
Okay, you're on, like, I spent a little bit of time in Japan with the Navy, and I was at the complete southern end of that main island. I was down in Sasebo, Japan, okay, when I was stationed. I never got to, like, really visit Tokyo. So we're on opposite ends of the island. But we're really excited to talk to you, because we know Japan is like karaoke in Japan is a completely different ball game, and we're happy you're going to be able to bring that perspective. But tell us a little bit about yourself first. When did you first start doing karaoke? Was it in the U.S. or was it in Japan?
So it was in the U.S. So I grew up in New York City, and I should specify that even in the U.S., I still use the Japanese system, because in New York City, you can actually get private room karaoke all over the place. So I was in high school, and I went to an arts high school, so LaGuardia Arts, or better known as the Fame School, if you've seen the original movie. So it was very common, for example, at school to hear people singing in the hallways if they're studying, you know, to be a vocal major, to be a professional singer. So I always enjoyed music. My family is very, very musical. My father played piano. I used to play piano. My brother plays a bunch of instruments. I think my grandfather could pretty much play any instrument that he could pick up, but usually play the flute. So, you know, music was a very big part of my family, but none of us were singers. And I was into musicals as a kid, like starting when I was 7. So it was around the tail end of me doing musicals in community theater that I got into karaoke through some friends. We just all went to a room like after school, and it was just super fun. And I think because I always went with people who were literally trying to be professional singers, it really helped to like kind of release some tension, because I knew I was never going to be the best singer in the room. Yeah, it was really fun. And to this day, it's definitely a different experience now as an adult, but I really, really enjoy going as much as I can. If I could afford it, I would probably go as often as you guys do.
Oh, God. Yeah. I personally haven't been in a while. I'm looking to get back to it sometime soon. Right. Yeah, I know Ed still goes all the time, though, and he can attest to that.
I go... I'm scaling it back a little bit now that the COVID stuff is back on the upswing, even though I'm vaccinated. It's seeming less and less like a good idea to be out. So I did buy a karaoke machine for home, so I have that going for me. But so let me ask you this, Ayumi. You've done karaoke in both the U.S. and Japan. Have you ever done the Western style stuff? I know you said that when we were talking before this, that it wasn't really your cup of tea.
I have... from what I can remember, I only remember doing it one time, and it was prom in high school. So We had, again, New York City, everything is very extra, but we had this like really weird after prom on a boat, and there was the karaoke room. And so I went there and I tried singing, and it was very awkward because like no one around, I think only one person that was in that room actually knew who I was, and there was like a teacher who was not very cool, who was just kind of there because she had to be. So it just, I remember it feeling very embarrassing. Like, I mean, I guess it's because I'm very used to performing on stage at this point, but doing something like that, like, you know, the song choice becomes a personal thing. And I believe, yes, I sang Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. And I mean, it's a good song. I thought, oh, you know, everyone would know this song. But like, it was very clear that no one was paying attention to me singing. And I remember just feeling very awkward about that. Like, everyone was kind of like just to themselves chatting or drinking or whatever. So I just, you know, like, not that I need to be the center of attention when I'm at karaoke, but when it's a private room and you're only with friends, it's a very different experience, I think.
Yeah, it's a very different experience, and you know, we've all felt that struggle about, you know, getting started, you know, in the Western style is very, very tough, and it's a very unique thing. Now you've done private rooms, K boxes in both, you know, United States and Japan. Is there anything different about them? Is there any kind of distinction you kind of draw between them? Any similarities? Just talk a little bit about that.
I would say the main difference is the song availability. So, obviously, in the US, they're going to be more focused on English songs. So, usually, from what I've understood, at least in the places I went to in New York, they would have basically two song systems in the system, the machine. I don't know how it works. So they because the places I went to were Japanese owned businesses, they would have live dam with the live dam system for Japanese music. But even that was very limited compared to live dam in Japan, from what I've noticed coming back here. And then there's a lot more English music than is available in Japan, which is like often my main problem when I want to sing in English in Japan. There's not as many songs there. I mean, there are a lot because American music especially is very popular in Japan, but it's not the same amount as in the US.
If I remember correctly, Adam, when you were over there, you found stuff that we could not find in the US, right?
Yeah, there were some American. It was. I think you're absolutely correct, because from my experiences, because I didn't. I did a little bit of private room stuff because, you know, I started, like, I love private rooms, and they were much more available than they are in the United States when I was down in Sasebo. But I also learned that, you know, anytime I go out to a bar in Japan, they had karaoke there. Like, you know, I'd hand 200 yen to the bartender, and they would cue up a song and hand me the little selection pad and the wireless microphone. I ran into two things, actually. I ran into, there were American songs that you can't find in America in Japan. Number two, the selection, when I was out at some of these bars, you know, it wasn't just sailors. I like gravitating to places where it was more, people that lived in Japan, and like Japanese people in general, they gravitated towards. I had sang two duets when I was there, the people that I would say, well, I'm a spunk. Completely Japanese. One was I sang a Linkin Park with an older Japanese man that was at the bar that could do Crawling in My Skin, that entire thing. Like, he had me do the rap part because he heard me rap earlier in the night. And then he sang that. And like, I don't think this guy spoke a lick of English, but man, he was pitch perfect singing Linkin Park. It was amazing. And the other one, I sang Bon Jovi with somebody random, like, because they were really, this dude was really into Bon Jovi. I have a great picture of that. So it's an interesting contrast that you kind of get there. Do you have any advice? So I was an American that was doing karaoke in Japan because I loved it, and I kind of just faked it as I went along. If somebody like Ed were to go visit Japan right now, what advice would you give Ed if he were to visit Japan and sing some karaoke?
Well, I mean, you know, there are definitely a lot of places that have karaoke in, you know, like in bars and stuff, like you said, that what we would call like a Western style, that definitely still exists. There, in my city, there's a ramen shop that has karaoke for some reason. I've never been in there, but I know it exists. I guess the first thing would be to know how to recognize the word karaoke in Japanese, so that because any place that has it, they're gonna, you know, post it up on a sign outside of the business, because that is a way to, it's a selling point, you know. So I would say that's probably the main way that like that's the first thing, so that you know where to go. If you have, so like some other things that are really not necessarily important, but you know, one thing people like to do is if you're using the same system every time, you know, I would say that if you're looking for older music, if you're going to any karaoke place, often the two big systems are LiveDAM, like I said, and also JoySound. So if you're looking for that kind of thing, like if you're looking for older songs especially, then I would recommend going to a JoySound machine. Usually when you're getting a karaoke room, they're going to ask you which one to get. I know in a place like Tokyo, they're going to probably ask you, if it's a bigger place, like they're going to ask you to make an account or whatever, but they're also going to ask you that question, LiveDAM or JoySound. So I would say you should probably use JoySound, but one thing that's very interesting is that a lot of LiveDAM systems also have the live versions of songs. So it's a very different sound, obviously. But I don't know why they do that. Often it's like a longer version of the song or something.
Does it have the audience like response to it in there? Because it would be nice for me to actually have people or have the sound of people appreciating music, because I don't usually get that because I'm not great.
I think so. I'm not sure because I don't personally do that. My husband, who's also a very big karaoke fan, does it sometimes. But it's mostly just like he wants to, you know, enjoy the full length of the like the fuller version of the song, not about like having that sound, I guess, because he's also a private room guy. I don't think he's ever done it in a public space.
Do you guys have a karaoke machine at home? I'm just curious.
No, we don't. That would probably be great if we didn't live in an apartment that is like has very thin walls.
Gotcha.
Honestly, the main way that we do karaoke, it's usually just my husband and I going to a room together most of the time. Honestly, I usually would be comfortable doing what's called free time, which would be like unlimited, up to 6 hours maybe. And then, like you can otherwise pay by hour. Some places have, you pay by the half hour. So you have to be careful about that in terms of checking the prices of things. Usually we end up only doing like an hour and a half, cause that's his limit.
Now, when you guys do it, is it just the two of you then?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we just go back and forth singing literally whatever we want. It's never about entertaining each other. I mean, we have a handful of like songs that are like our songs, but most of the time it's just, oh, I'm really into this music right now, so I'm going to sing this song.
That's fantastic. Me and my partner are actually talking about doing that sometime soon, because karaoke is not fully back in New York City yet, but getting a private room at certain times is much more affordable and
yes,
easy. And I have such a hankering for it at this point. I've been on such like a dry spell for so long now that I'm ready to just get back out there. So
yeah.
I would really love it. So I'm going to ask you, tell me a story about karaoke. Just as much detail as you want to go to, as like, just tell me a story about your most memorable karaoke night. Not necessarily your favorite, not necessarily your least favorite, but just most memorable karaoke night.
Most memorable? Goodness. That's really hard because I've gone so many times, but I would probably say the time that was my husband and I's first date is the most memorable, but obviously there's other reasons for that.
Tell us about the first time you and your husband.
We would love the romance of it.
You know, before we became a couple, my husband and I were work friends. We were just friends, and then we became best friends. And then he finally had the courage to ask me out. And so then we went to karaoke together. And it was very interesting because we had done this before as friends, but you know, obviously at that time, everything was so suddenly so different, right? There was a very different energy in the room. But otherwise, like the song choices were still the same for the most part, except I think we kind of established one of our songs at that point, because we both are really big fans of this this animated series called Love Live. And kind of also in a very musical like sort of way, it's a show about idols. They have lots of music and lots of different characters now, but there's one song from one of the groups in that show that's It's a romantic Christmas song. And that became a song that like we sang together because we both liked the song, but because it also had like very romantic lyrics of like, oh, I've always liked you and stuff like that. It like became one of our songs. There are other songs that my husband likes to sing to me because he loves this song and he loves the lyrics of the song. So he does speak English. He's Japanese, but he speaks English, and he loves, I know it's a very cheesy song, but he loves I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
It's an awesome song. That's great.
Yeah. So he sings it. He sings it a lot of times. And usually when he sings it while looking at me directly, and it's very cute.
That's really sweet. Oh, I love that too.
Yeah, but anyway, long story short, we ended up having our first kiss during that in the karaoke room. So
during singing the song?
No, not during singing. It was like we were taking a break because one thing that's really great about karaoke rooms that are private is you can also often order food in them. So I think we were like eating or something. And it's a good thing, but he does not listen to podcasts, so he has no idea I'm going to tell the story. But his move, because he had actually never had a girlfriend before me, was he kind of made it clear he wanted to kiss me, and then he said, "Oh, can you keep your eyes closed?" And I said, "Okay." So I closed my eyes, and I felt him like coming close to me, but I didn't know what was going on. So I opened them again, and he was right in front of my face, and he freaked out, and I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'll do it again." And then, yeah, he kissed me, and it was very, very cute.
That's adorable. Yeah. I love that.
That is so cute. Yes, I love that so much. That's amazing. Yeah. What's your husband's name?
Oh, his name is Yusuke.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, God, my heart. My heart's so full right now, Ed.
I really hope he listens to this so he can know that you shared that beautiful story. And I mean, so you've heard the podcast before, and I mean, so clearly he hit you with his best shot. Now we're gonna play our quick fire game, Hit Me With Your Best Shot. So we're gonna ask you five questions. First answer that comes to mind will be the ideal answer. And then at the end, you'll get to fire away and ask us whatever question you want to ask, karaoke related or otherwise. Are you ready to play our game?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. Adam, I'm gonna take the lead on this one. So I would
go ahead, Ed. I can't get over your transition. So right now.
What is the best thing you've seen at karaoke?
The best thing? Oh, yes. When I was in high school, my best friend sang the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift song by the Teriyaki Boys, which is a Japanese and English rap song, but she didn't know any Japanese, but she got it perfectly. She practiced a lot, and it was amazing.
That is amazing. I'm impressed that I didn't see it. I wish I would have seen that. And there's a lot of things I wish I could erase from my memory. So
I can fumble my way through one Japanese song, which that's it. But
What song would that be?
Yeah. What song is that?
Well, the American name, I didn't realize that the American name for it was not the actual name for it until I listened to Andrew Hickey's A History of Rock Music in 500 Songs. But it's Sukiyaki.
Okay. Yeah.
Ed. Okay. Back to the game. what's the worst thing you've seen at karaoke?
The worst thing? I mean, pretty much anytime any other person tries rap music because they think it's going to be easy. Yeah.
I guess listeners can't see how pumped Adam and I got for that answer. We loved it.
Yes. Rap is also part of my karaoke repertoire as well. It's always very frustrating to see people think that it's not that difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. We can have an entire podcast episode on just that. If we do, we're going to bring you back just so we can talk about just that in particular, because
sounds good.
What is one song you would love to do at karaoke that you've never been able to find? And that could even if we don't know what it is, that's great. I mean, if it's a Japanese song, fantastic. If it's an American song, fantastic. It doesn't matter.
Well, these days, what I really miss, because I used to be able to sing it in the U.S. and I can't sing it anymore, is Coheed and Cambria songs. I love Coheed and Cambria. Their music really, really suits my vocal style. So I miss singing their music because I used to sing it a lot in high school. Yeah,
that's a good choice. It's something different. I love it when people bring fresh new perspectives. So I love that. I love that answer. I really do. But so you're in a brand new place when traveling, and you only have one chance to sing one song. What do you pick to make your mark?
This is a difficult question. probably would go with maybe Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid. It's a little cheesy, but it's in my vocal range. So
I wouldn't say it's cheesy, as you can see by my celebrating. Yeah.
Lastly, if you could magically strike one song from every karaoke playlist and every karaoke machine forever, which song would you choose?
This one's difficult. I think New York, New York by Frank Sinatra.
Okay.
I know it's very random. I don't know how many people actually sing it, but it's
so many.
As a New Yorker, it's very tiring.
Yes. Best answer so far, because that is the song they play after every Yankees victory.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And I hate the Yankees. So that's the best answer we've heard so far.
Those victories don't happen as much as they used to either. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Ayumi, that was great. You were like, those answers were so amazing. And I loved all of them so, so very much. You brought a fresh new perspective that we deeply appreciate. So you've been through the ringer. We hit you with our best shot. Now you have a chance to fire away. So go ahead, hit us. What do you got? Karaoke related or not, we solemnly swear, fingers crossed, that we will answer honestly.
So my question is, if you had to sing a song that is not in English, maybe you know the language, maybe you don't, what would it be?
Oh, God.
I've got mine. I'll go while Adam thinks. I mean, I've already tipped my hat with the sukiyaki thing, but that wouldn't be the choice. I would love to do Edith Piaf's La Vie en Rose.
Oh.
With the French lyrics. I could do the Louis Armstrong American lyric one, but I really prefer her version.
I think I have that one in Japan, actually.
Nice.
There are some, I can't think of the song specifically right now, but there are songs that Regina Spektor sings that's in, I believe, French is the one that I like really enjoy of hers, that I would love to, you know, I have a tendency sometimes with the female vocalist to be able to drop the key, and I think there's a natural transition there for me as a singer to fit my vocal range. I love Regina Spektor. I admire what she brings and the sound that she develops, and I would love to, you know, she blends a little bit, so I'm kind of cheating because it's partially in English, partially in French. But I would love to be able to, you know, hang with her and, you know, kind of go that direction. Yeah. What's your answer to the same question? I know we're done with the game, but I'm going to fire it back at you.
Sure. So I mean, I don't mind. I not to brag, but I know French and Italian. So I would like to sing more in French and Italian, but there aren't a lot of options available in Japan. Obviously, it's very English focused in terms of foreign music, but I guess maybe probably in the future I'd like to try to maybe get more into Korean music and then maybe try to sing some Korean music.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Yes, thank you. You fired away. We're done. That was it. So what we'd like to do right now is we're going to hand you the floor. If there's any social media you'd like to plug, any you want to plug your podcast, tell the people what it's about, you know, anything you want to talk about, take as much time as you'd like, really, and just let us know when you're done. The floor is yours. Tell the people how they can get more of that Ayumi content they crave.
Well, so I guess the main thing is, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter is at Ayushinows, AYUSHEKNOWS. And my podcast is called Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. It's all about magical girls. And if you don't know what that means, you can just listen to the first episode to get a primer on that. And just listen to whatever episodes, you know, suit your fancy. But we do talk about singing sometimes a little bit on there. And you can also find the podcast on Twitter at Magical Girl Ayu, spelled AYU.
Fantastic. And that's it. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from Japan. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed yourself too.
Yes, I had a great time. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for joining us. And we hope to see you singing at a screen sometime soon.
I hope so too. Yeah.
I don't know why I sounded like a vampire right there.
I'm assuming we're out of recording mode now. That was fantastic.
I'm still in recording mode.
Jeez.
Ladies, gentlemen, and non-binary friends out there, we have a very special treat for you today. Our guest, Ayumi Shinazaki, sent us a video of her singing in Japanese, which we are psyched to feature here on The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly. So without further ado, here she is singing Piece of Love in Japanese.
I thought you were just making noises.
This song always sounded. Are you not
hearing me correctly? Is there an issue?
Yeah, there might be. I don't know.
Then we both get really quiet all of a sudden. It's like a weird deafness set in. Is this too much karaoke? Is this the effects of too much karaoke?
I mean, this is like ASMR, right? Isn't that what people are into these days?
I think it is. I think
maybe we should just do it this way.
Maybe you should blow your like vape into the microphone. Oh, that's what they're into. And if they're really into those things, they should follow us on social media.
And I was playing around with you the entire time.
I know.
I didn't really go get my voice thinking. You didn't really go deaf. I was just playing games. I was having a good goof. That's what we do here. We tell goofs, right? We tell goofs about people following us at Sung Poorly on Twitter and emailing us sungpoorly@gmail.com so they can tell us how bad our goofs are and leaving us probably 1-star reviews on iTunes and listening anywhere they can music and all the things that we normally say at this point in the show.
We do what say else? A lot of things, Adam.
What else do we normally say, Ed?
We usually thank Ben Dumb.
Oh, Ben Dumb. Yeah, we normally do. Could you do that? I love when you do it. You do it so good. Yeah, I mean,
you know what? Thank you, Ben Dumb, for letting us use your song Gasoline as our theme song. Be sure to check out his latest project, The Ben Dumb 3, on Spotify or the music platform of your choice.
Ed, can we start giving a weekly message to specifically Ben Dumb? Like just one sentence for Ben Dumb to chew on till we release another episode. You know what I'm saying? Because I know he's really been into the podcast recently. He's listening, even though he was generous enough to get a theme song. He's an avid listener. Let's just... right here to be thankful for Ben Dumb, we're just going to give him one sentence for him to think about for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to let you kick us off. What is, just give Ben Dumb something to think about for the next 2 weeks.
Whiskey for breakfast.
Think about it, Ben Dumb. Let us know how you feel on Twitter or Facebook. But remember, whiskey for breakfast. Only Ben Dumb can think about that too. No one else can think about whiskey for breakfast. This is specifically Ben Dumb. So don't think about it, everybody. But in 2 weeks, make sure you come back to hear what our next thought for Ben Dumb is. And that's now what the entire theme of the podcast is going to be. It's no longer a karaoke podcast. It is now just specifically, we talk about karaoke for an hour and people eagerly look forward to what our next thought for Ben Dumb is going to be. So in 2 weeks, make sure you tune back in for another thought to Ben Dumb. When we revisit the world of online karaoke with two guys who started a community and a podcast to bring back that weekend karaoke feel. That's it. That's all. There is no more. So until next time, I'm Adam Wainwright.
I'm Ed Kennard.
And remember that singing off key is still technically...
Though I am water.